Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. In addition to our guest interview, we'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I was on a Zoom call last week with Jonathan Conricus, who became pretty famous after October 7th with his extensive appearances representing Israel on CNN, the BBC World News, Fox News, Sky News, more or less every media outlet that exists. Conricus is a retired Israeli lieutenant colonel with extensive military and diplomatic experience who was called back to be a spokesperson for the IDF in this war and became the most evident official voice of Israel abroad in the months after the beginning of the Gaza War. After giving hundreds of interviews in the months after October 7th, Conricus left the official IDF service. He is now at an organization called the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Jonathan Conricus is notable because he is both strongly pro-Israel and open about aspects of the situation that are not usually discussed. Plus, he's willing to criticize the mistakes his own country has made and is making strategically. Ostensibly, this meeting was to discuss Israel's strategy of, perhaps, killing the leaders of Hamas and Hezbollah. But Conricus did not feel this was particularly significant to talk about. It was sort of, what's the difference in exchanging one murderous terrorist who kills his own people with his own hands for another one who does the same? In a discussion with the Zionist Rabbinic Network, the points Conricus made that were most notable were that he said clearly Israel's strategy of trying to stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons and to resist Iran's strategic efforts to build what he calls a ring of fire around Israel, they're both failing. First, Iran is now, according to him, nearly nuclear. It has already enriched enough uranium for multiple nuclear bombs. It lacks only an effective delivery system. Secondly, Conricus notes that Iran has funded, armed, and organized effective anti-Israel terrorist militias in Gaza, the West Bank, Yemen, Syria, and, as he put it, their greatest evil accomplishment, Hezbollah in Lebanon, all of which are causing severe problems for Israel right now and killing Israelis. In addition, he notes Iran is working to create, fund, and arm terrorist militias in Jordan now, and northern Somalia next. These Iranian proxies are bleeding Israel in many ways. Now, Israel's military responses to these attacks on its citizens, while tactically effective and often brilliant in many ways, nonetheless always lead to harsh international criticism and damage to Israel's reputation abroad. And they damage Israel's economy and society, too. Conricus, who represented the IDF rather than the Israeli government, strongly criticized Israel's strategy in these areas, as well as Israel's struggles to maintain a successful media and social media strategy of any kind to counteract Iran's manipulations. For Conricus, Israel needs a new way to fight Iran that is more than simply seeking quiet, or a limited level of acceptable hostility with these ultra-violent terrorist Arab proxies that are the tools of Iran, its greatest enemy. He noted the tremendous failure of October 7th, but did highlight the tactical achievements of the Israeli military on extremely challenging urban battlefields in Gaza, actually tactically brilliant in many ways. Conricus also noted that just after October 7th, he immediately recommended Israel needed to present a plan for what was to happen to the Gaza civilians to answer the question for the international community. Israel simply did not. In fact, he discussed a meeting with UNRWA, UNRWA, in which they offered to evacuate civilians, and UNRWA said, no, thank you. In addition, he highlighted the total absence in the Israeli government and in the IDF of a contemporary and modern public affairs and information system. Israel is losing the information war, but it doesn't have to lose it. It hasn't prioritized this information war against its enemies nearly sufficiently, and there is a high price to pay for that mistake. There are apparently seven different fronts, at least, in the current war Israel is engaged in, according to Israeli military strategists. The greatest goal for Israel, according to Jonathan Conricus, should be regime change in Iran. Now that sounds visionary, but the oppressive Islamic Republic regime needs to be challenged in every way that it can be, he says, including economic, technological, and military efforts. Conricus even noted that Israel has the capability to put a serious economic price on Iran's actions, even stopping Iran's petrochemical exports, which it uses to fund that terrorist ring all around Israel. It was quite striking to hear Conricus state Israel should dramatically change its regional strategy, to note that it's failing and also losing the information war. And then hear him make concrete recommendations about what Israel should be doing instead. This didn't come from somebody anti-Israel, but profoundly pro-Israel. His analysis, which seems to me both accurate and cogent, was certainly stated factually without referencing personalities like, oh, the current Prime Minister of Israel, for example. Well, I'll tell you, that analysis hits home. It's not clear that Israel will follow Conricus's advice, and instead of attacking the Arab symptoms of the Iranian problem, actually bring the mullahs in Iran to understand there will be a real price to pay for attacking Israel through these proxies. You know, if you haven't heard Jonathan Conricus before, look him up on YouTube or really online anywhere. He makes a lot of sense. And his English, he is Swedish-Israeli, by the way, his English is impeccable. To play us in this morning on Too Jewish, also from Israel, here's Israeli singer Eyal Golan singing his newish version of Am Yisrael Chai, The People of Israel Lives.
בקרוב תזרח השמש, נדע ימים יפים מאלה, הלב נלחם בדאגות. כולם יחזרו הביתה, נחכה להם למטה, הלוואי נדע בשורות טובות. כי עם הנצח לעולם לא מפחד, אפילו כשקשה לראות. כולם ביחד, אף אחד פה לא בודד, שישרפו המלחמות. עם ישראל חי, אם לא נשכח תמיד להיות מאוחדים. עם ישראל חי, נחלתנו, לא תיפול כעת רוחנו מסביב ברזל של חרבות. ויונה תפרוס כנפיים, התקווה בת שנות אלפיים, עוד נצא לשיר ברחובות. כי עם הנצח לעולם לא מפחד, אפילו כשקשה לראות. כולם ביחד, אף אחד פה לא בודד, שישרפו המלחמות. עם ישראל חי, אם לא נשכח תמיד להיות מאוחדים. עם ישראל חי, בעליות בירידות גם בשעות הכי קשות.
That was Eyal Golan singing Am Yisrael Chai, for Israel, the people Israel lives. Our guests this morning have written a great summer read called Boss Lady. Ali Frank and Asha Humans find out what motivated their new fourth novel together. We come back in just a moment right here on Too Jewish. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guests this morning, Ali Frank and Asha Humans, are the authors, co-authors of the book Boss Lady. They're the co-authors of several other books that they've done together. Both are from the Washington State area originally and have come together to write, I think it's fair to call this, a very entertaining summer read. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely.
I don't want to type books, you know, there are genre books that transcend genre, but are you trying for that? Tell me a little bit about how your writing process evolves between the two of you.
Can I take that one, Asha?
Please.
That's a good one for you.
I know. That actually is an excellent question to start off with, because in publishing, there are these very set guidelines around genre. And it's not always that you fit into them. And so, and Asha and I really believe that our writing doesn't fit into one genre. What we keep trying to get pushed into is romantic comedy and contemporary women's fiction. What we like to say is that we are actually comedy with some romance, and we exist for fiction for everyone, not just women. So we say we're contemporary comedy of great stories of fiction.
Well, that's a nice way to put it. I like that a lot. In creating your heroine, she has a very complicated, let's say, ethnic background. That's by choice?
Yes, I would take that one. You know, yeah. I think that complicated may be relative. Definitely, I am from a multi-hyphenated background and live in a community where people are also multi-hyphenated. So it isn't very unusual for me and Ali to have interacted in people in our lives that have come from so many different backgrounds, but it is certainly a pointed choice for us as exploring issues of race, culture, religion, gender, privilege, education, and parenting, and so many other weighty issues is something that we seek to do, certainly with full purpose. And we hope to do so with a little bit of joy and humor in it.
There certainly is some humor. And of course, it's fascinating. Somehow the heroines of books like this, I shouldn't say like this, but they're often very, very attractive. Again, that's a choice.
Well, I'll answer that one. You know, all our books, we really strive to have multiple generations in the books. So this one in particular, there's really four women, maybe even six if you include the daughters, but
right.
twin
right.
middle school daughters, a 28-year-old woman, a almost 40-year-old woman, a 65-year-old woman, and an 88-year-old woman. And what we
by the way, the 88-year-old woman is fantastic. I just
I know she is Sylvia Eisenberg is the bomb.
She's great.
But we really strive to show beauty across generations
beauty
from the inside out, and that it's not, you know, beauty is not just for the youth, and beauty, you know, internal beauty is just not for older people, that you can be beautiful inside and out regardless of age.
And I wanted to focus on the fact that it's not her beauty that matters. It's ultimately her creativity and her enterprise. We will talk much more with our guests this morning, Allie Frank and Asha Humans on Too Jewish. The book is called Boss Lady. We'll be back in just a moment. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in Northwest Tucson and the Catalina Foothills, has a fabulous array of services, classes, and events this summer and fall. Established nearly 6 years ago by wonderful congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A progressive congregation in Northwest Tucson and the Foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area. Weekly Shabbat services, Friday night and Saturday morning, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Religious school is starting soon for school-aged children and grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Torah Tikes program, Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah programs, confirmation and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, to sign up now. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m. All available online as well as in person. Our Facebook page for services is Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson. And our Adult Education Academy classes, and they are extensive, are available live and on Zoom. You can access all of them through the website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of adult education academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, and sign up for my new three-week class this week. Starts this Wednesday on the history of Zionism, meets at the JCC right here in Tucson. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up or call 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation community in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or ekvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18@gmail.com, or visit our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store. It's a very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments help. Tomorrow night, Monday night, and Tuesday, we'll commemorate the Jewish Day of Mourning, Tisha B'Av. Our services at Congregation Beit Simcha will be at 7:30 p.m. We remember then the destruction of both the first and second temples on the sad ninth day of the Hebrew calendar month of Av. In Tisha B'Av, this day of commemoration, we fast and chant the powerful Book of Lamentations from the Bible. Remember not only these destructions. The first temple was destroyed by the Babylonians in the year 586 BCE, the second temple by the Romans in the year 70 CE. But we also remember other terrible events that occurred around this day. The Battle of Beitar, in which the Romans defeated and annihilated the army of Shimon bar Kochba in the year 135 CE. The expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1492, timed to land on that day by the royal majesties, and other awful tragedies of our people. Tisha B'Av is not a date of joy or celebration, but a fast day, when we neither eat nor drink. Personally, I can tell you that fasting on Tisha B'Av is just about the most difficult of the official fasts on the Jewish calendar. The summer days are long and hot. Going without food and water until 8 at night seems worse than starting the fast earlier and ending it earlier, as we will on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. This year, Tisha B'Av seems more immediate than it has in a long time. The terrible events of October 7th aren't necessarily part of the commemoration of a Jewish tragedy day in August, but they overshadow so much of how we think about the world now. And the understanding that awful events for our people are always linked in our collective memory makes this Tisha B'Av, this remembrance of tragedies past, into a particularly sobering day. As we remember Tisha B'Av and that first destruction, here's a classic American song on the text from Lamentations by Don McLean, Babylon. Welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So the French elections were supposed to bring the far right party to power based on the early results, and then they had the next round, and that's not what happened. But for those of us who are not experts in French politics, maybe you can explain things a little bit.
Sure. The French political system is extremely complicated.
It's French, so of course.
It's French, right. So... like their grammar. And, you know, language shapes
and
the way
sauces,
we think.
And their sauces, to be honest. So, you know, they're kind of complicated. Too.
Some of their sauces aren't so complicated, but their grammar certainly is. So French presidential elections take place in two rounds normally. And the first round, anybody can be on the ballot. There's no real minimum number of supporters required. So there's often, you know, a dozen or 15 candidates. And then only those who score above a certain threshold move on to the second round. And this year, what happened was that essentially three candidates moved on to the second round. The party of Le Pen, the party of Macron, which is a centrist party, and Le Pen, for those of your listeners who may not know, is the far right. I mean, really hard right.
Founded by really a fascist.
Her father.
Her
right.
father.
And
a fascist anti-Semite, we might add.
The parties of the left and center left, remarkably for France, united and presented like one face and one candidate. And they are the ones who did surprisingly well. You know, in an election that came out roughly 40-30-30, where the centrists and the far right were approximately equal, the coalition of the left parties was dominant, but not an absolute majority. So that sets up a kind of lame duck government in which the current prime minister, who is Jewish, named Gabriel Attal, has been asked to stay on as a caretaker government, as the head of a caretaker government, until they can figure out who they need to appoint to ministerial positions and ultimately also to the prime minister's position in order to please the existing reality of political parties and in order for legislation to be able to move, even at a snail's pace, through the National Assembly. It's also interesting, possibly for your listeners, that in France, the National Assembly is the equivalent to our House of Representatives. It's Congress. And the Senate is the Senate, but it's much less powerful than ours. It's more symbolic and prestigious. The terms are longer, like they are here. But they don't do as much legislative work as the National Assembly. The National Assembly has often had a lot of Jews and rising stars from several parties. The Senate is more patrician and old France. But when I was in France, for example, there was a senator whose name was Dreyfus Schmidt, and he was a Dreyfus. I mean, descended from
Alfred Dreyfus.
Right, exactly. And you could even tell by the way he looked. I mean, Jews from that part of France, from Alsace, often have red hair, sort of curly red hair, blue eyes, whatever. I mean, they look kind of like you.
Kind of like my kids.
Right. And that guy, Dreyfus Schmidt, he looked like that. You could tell where he was from and what ethnicity he was from just by his face. The other thing that I would caution your listeners about is don't panic that France is going to be in deadlock, because they've had this situation before. When I was there, François Mitterrand, socialist, was president for 7 years. Then there was another election, which his party didn't quite win. And it was a situation a little bit like today's, in which there was what was called cohabitation, la cohabitation, where the two major parties or blocks of parties learn to live with each other. It may not always be smooth, but they make it work for the sake of La France.
Right. Well, it's an interesting, and boy, politics is always complicated, but this year it seems more so than ever. Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A guy goes to his psychiatrist. Doctor, I had the weirdest dream. I was talking to my mother, but she had your face. I was so freaked out, I couldn't get back to sleep. I tossed and turned all night. Finally, I got up at 7 o'clock, made myself a slice of toast and some coffee, and came right over here. Doctor, what do you think the dream means? The psychiatrist is quiet for a long moment and then says, "A slice of toast and some coffee? That you call a breakfast?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you, you should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. You are quite possibly familiar with the most important text in this week's portion of Vayetchanan. For Jews, these are the very first Hebrew words we teach a child. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. Most commentary on this great sentence of the Shema focuses on the word echad, one, the core idea of belief in one God, monotheism itself. But for me, the most interesting word in the Shema is not echad, one, but the very first word, Shema. What does Shema mean? Well, essentially it means listen, or since it's in the command form, tzivui in Hebrew, it means listen up, pay attention, hear what is going to be said. So why was it necessary to order the Israelite people to listen? Well, if everyone was always listening, we would never have to command it. No one insists people pay attention when they're already doing so. It's a verbal effort to grab the wandering focus of the Israelites, to get them to hear what is about to be said. Listen, pay attention. This is important. And with the Jewish people, that is never an unnecessary summons. It's crucial that the next command after the commandment of the Shema, listen, is Ve'ahavta, the commandment to love God. First, we're told to listen, next to love. Fascinating sequence. The first listen is a command we can easily perform. We can be compelled to listen. But how can anyone be commanded to love? Love, by definition, is voluntary. It must be given freely, generously, emotionally, instinctively, or it's not really love. As the great Jewish theologian Franz Rosenzweig said, of course love cannot be commanded. No third party can command or extort it. So how is it possible for God to command us to love? The answer is right here in these familiar words of the Shema. We are actually being commanded to listen. Because if we truly listen, we cannot help but love. There is something precious, beautiful, and sacred about listening that allows us to love. Without listening, we as human beings aren't really capable of love. For love to exist, we have to listen to the other. Not just the other person's words or joys, but feelings, their pain, their inner messages. It's only through listening that we find out what makes their lives meaningful and can come to understand and truly love them. This week, we also remember Shabbat Nachamu, the Sabbath of Consolation, which falls after the commemoration of Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, this Monday night and Tuesday, our remembrance of the destruction of both temples. The great prophet 2nd Isaiah begins this week's Haftarah, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, be comforted, my people. So how does God comfort the people in this time of catastrophe? Isaiah promises repeatedly that God has heard the people's pain. And since God has listened, it is certain that God loves the people and will relieve that pain. At times of loss, often the only comfort comes from knowing someone is really listening. He can therefore supply the love that we all need to survive. We know that our relationship with God is supposed to mirror our relationships with each other. The book of Leviticus, earlier in this very Torah, has already commanded us to love other people. Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Now here in Deuteronomy, the Torah tells us to love God. There is a great lesson. For only after we've learned to listen to others and to love them can we come to listen to God and so love God. Only after we teach ourselves to listen can we truly love. May we remember this week to listen to those around us and so affirm our love for them and, therefore, of God. When we come back in a moment on Two Jewish, our guests, Ali Frank and Asha Humans, tell us how they originated their colorful characters, what it's like writing together, and what makes for a great summer read like their book. Hear all about it when we come back in a moment here on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Our brothers,
Following the execution of previous Hamas-Palestinian terrorist leader Ismail Haniyeh, the Islamist terrorist group has chosen Yahya Sinwar, chief planner of the atrocities of October 7th, as its new leader. Sinwar, who is believed to be hiding in Gaza, has consolidated authority after a long-running fight within Hamas's leadership. Haniyeh, who lived luxuriously in Qatar and interacted with world leaders, was seen as open to ceasefire talks, though he never agreed to any deal following that brief pause back in November of last year, and he was himself a terrorist and murderer. Sinwar, however, born in 1962, came up through the ranks of Hamas's dreaded morality police. He is seen as a murderous hardliner, even within Hamas. He is perceived as wielding significant authority even while he's on the run from Israel in Gaza. Sinwar learned fluent Hebrew and a lot about how Israel operates during 20 years in an Israeli prison after he was convicted for personally murdering Palestinians he suspected had collaborated with Israel. During Sinwar's incarceration, at one point he was diagnosed with and treated for a potentially fatal brain tumor in Israeli hospitals, which saved his life, ironically. Sinwar was released back in 2011 as one of more than 1,000 Palestinian security prisoners swapped for a single captured Israeli soldier, Gilad Shalit. In 2017, Sinwar succeeded Haniyeh as Hamas's leader in Gaza, and now he's head of the whole mess. It was nice to think for a while that there would have been another Jewish nominee for vice president, only the second in history. Apparently, there were three finalists for the Democratic VP not on the ticket, with current Vice President Kamala Harris in the number one slot, Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, an acquaintance and husband of former Congresswoman Gabby Gifford, who is Jewish and a personal friend, Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, who is a conservative Jew and keeps kosher, and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Harris obviously chose Walz, but for a while there, the speculation was that we would have our first Jewish nominee in a national presidential campaign since Joe Lieberman way back in the year 2000 nearly won the vice presidency on Al Gore's ticket. Alas, it was not to be. Shapiro, after not being chosen, quoted Rabbi Tarfon in Pirkei Avot, the ethics of the ancestors in the Mishnah, saying, "Since I first ran for state representative 20 years ago, I've been called to serve because I want to leave our community, our commonwealth, and our country better off for our children, and because my faith teaches me that no one is required to complete the task, but neither are we free to refrain from it." Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor velo ata ben charin lihi batel mimena, as we know it in Hebrew. Anyway, we will now go another 4 years at least without a Jewish president or vice president of the U.S., although we may have a first gentleman who is Jewish. We'll see. Look, we've gone nearly 250 years now without an elected Jewish or appointed Jewish president or vice president. A few more years seems less than consequential, perhaps. Still, it's too bad. Certainly from the perspective of the Two Jewish Radio Show. Jewish athletes have done very well at the Paris Olympic Games. Israel stunned, winning 6 early medals, including 1 gold, 4 silvers, and a bronze. At one point early in the Olympics, tiny Israel, with just 8 million citizens, had about the same number of Olympic medals as gigantic and athletically oriented Germany, with over 80 million citizens. That didn't last, but Israel ended with more medals than Mexico, for example, which has 125 million people, roughly 15 times Israel's size, and India, which has 1.4 billion people, roughly 150 times Israel's population and fewer Olympic medals. Remarkable. By the way, Israelis also won more Olympic medals than the total of all the Olympic medals won by Arab countries' athletes, from Morocco all the way to Saudi Arabia. That huge geographic and population base took home a total of 4 medals. Israel's Olympic accomplishments, 6 medals, including a gold, 4 silvers, and a bronze, are really a remarkable achievement, especially when you remember that old joke about what's the slimmest book in the library? Jewish sports heroes. Jewish athletes also won medals for Australia, including the sisters Jessica and Nomi Fox in canoeing and kayak. Jessica won 2 golds, Nomi 1, and Jemima Montag in race walking, while Americans Jackie Dubrovich and Maya Weintraub won gold medals in fencing. American Israeli Amit Elor became the youngest wrestling gold medalist in U.S. history. Israeli windsurfer Tom Ruveni won Israel's 4th gold medal ever. Israeli Artem Dolgopiat added a silver to his gold from the last Olympics in Tokyo, and so on. American and Israeli athletes medaled in judo, rugby, fencing, and swimming. And, of course, windsurfing and so on. Mazel tov to all those successful Jewish athletes. And that's the 2 Jewish News of Jews round the world. We are delighted to welcome back to 2 Jewish our guests this morning. Asha Humans and Ali Frank are the co-authors of the book Boss Lady. They are the co-authors of Tiny Imperfections, Never Meant to Meet You, The Better Half, really a whole bunch of books. And I'm sure more will be coming down the pike, is my guess. I want to talk a little bit about the whole focus in the book on the entrepreneurship of your protagonist. Is this based on anybody in particular? There sure is a TV show involved that seems very familiar.
You know, this story, like so many others of ours, evolved from being great observers of people. Allie and I love to people watch. I think when I was young, my mom would refer to it as being nosy. But we also look to ourselves as 2 seasoned women who have had decades long and illustrious careers in education, and have retired from those, from that profession. We weren't done yet. We weren't ready to sit home and knit, although knitting is awesome. We weren't ready to take up pickleball. we're not ready to, we don't have grandchildren. Our children are not in that stage. And we still knew that we wouldn't be able to sit down and do just the homebody life. We wanted to do more. We had greater aspirations, as we found so many of our peers continue to have, well into their 40s, well into their 50s, well into their 60s and onward. And those women who are retired that are peers of ours or that we know still had so much to teach us about their experiences. So the protagonist, Antonia, yes, she is reflective of where Allie and I are in our lives, 2 women who have done quite a bit, have so many accomplishments under our belt, but are still looking for more to contribute.
You're both educators professionally for, fairly long periods of time, right? Did you always think about writing?
Not really in any professional capacity. Asha and I actually met working at the same school. I was assistant head of school, and Asha was the pre-K teacher, and we both served on the admissions committee of the school.
A fancy private school, we might add, because admissions, there's very few admissions committees in public schools. I just feel like
No, this is for sure a private school. And being on an admissions committee is often taken very seriously. Asha and I, exact opposite, we found a lot of comedy in the scenario at play of hand-wringing parents and truth-telling children. And it was really that experience that we had together and our numerous times laughing about it that launched the idea for our first novel, Tiny Imperfections. And we wrote it in 14 months, neither of us being English majors having, you know, creative MFAs, anything. But we had great stories to tell, and it just sort of took off from there, surprising both of us and our husbands, I might add, and our families. And I can't believe it. 7 years later, we have 4 books out and are well into our fifth.
Well, I will ask you about the fifth, but let's focus on the fourth here a little more. It's interesting because are either of you kind of math science people?
Super far from it for me. Very far from math or science.
Although, Asha, I'd say you are the tiniest bit closer than I am.
Yes.
At least you read science fiction.
I do.
Because there's kind of a lot of, you know, math, science, invention, stuff like that, right, in the book?
Oh, we did rely quite a bit on Allie's husband, who is a great finance guy and helped us with the business aspect of it, as did her dad. He handles all of our finances for our production company and all of our work together. So we used our community around us quite a bit and leaned on them heavily for advice and which direction to go.
But Asha, I want to give us credit.
Okay.
All the business ideas in the book, we came up with. Those are all our ideas. We have no interest in making them actual companies, but we were pretty proud of ourselves that the businesses are good ideas. If anyone wants
I don't know. It might pay better than book writing. I'm just saying, you know.
So true. Yeah, teachers and writers were really raking it in.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you. Look, my parents, my mom was a teacher and my dad was a cantor, and they used to joke about how they got rich by not selling their houses. It was just accidental. Because neither one of those pays very well either. Tell us a little bit about how you integrate the entrepreneurship aspects of it then.
The entrepreneur aspect, you know, there is part of the book, but it's not, we don't believe it's much of a focus of the book, is the reality TV show, not unlike Shark Tank at the end.
Kind of exactly like Shark Tank.
Yeah, yeah. But the, you know, essentially the entrepreneurship angle was just a choice to demonstrate a protagonist who had a vision of herself and who she was in the world from a very young age. And many things happened to her that rocked her life through her 20s and 30s, but she never lost sight of who she felt like she was at the core when she was a child. And she was determined to bring herself back to that essence. And for her, that essence was using her phenomenal math and science skills to develop, some interesting entrepreneurial bent that went out into the world. But it's really more about her holding fast to who she's always seen herself as than really, it could have been an entrepreneur, it could have been a doctor, it could have been an artist, but holding true to who you are.
So, a bit of a diversion. You guys both have a long athletic experience. How does that influence your writing at all?
That's such a good question. We haven't really written that much about athletes. I can say the way it influences my writing is I'm a huge runner. And so I just go out and run and let my mind wander. And often I come back from a run and I immediately call Asha and I'm like, brrr! I thought of this and this and this and this and this. And she sort of gets the download. And then she says, okay, 3 of those 84 things are good. But I would say now at, you know, my middle age, I use my athletic time for my creative time. But what about you, Asha?
I think I reflect more on what I've learned from the athletic experiences in my life, and that is that even when you try your very best, you still might make a mistake, and you got to get back up and keep on going. So I think that just that sports-mindedness helps me with continuing to reach for the goals that I've set.
I want to thank Ali Frank and Asha Humans for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Their book is called Boss Lady. Where can people go to find out more about the two of you and more about your books?
Well, for sure, please follow us on Instagram, Facebook, all of it, at Ali and Asha. As well, our website is just aliandasha.com. And, you know, if your readers do like reading great books with humorous Jewish protagonists, we also very much recommend our second book, Never Meant to Meet You, which is about a white Jewish woman and a black Baptist woman, and they are neighbors, and a husband dies and all sorts of things ensue. And I would also like to just put a plug out there, if I may, that a new book is coming out called On Being Jewish, of which I'm one of the contributors, 75 essays by Jewish writers about what it is like to be Jewish today.
Well, that's a book I have to have and have to talk to somebody about. So when does that come out?
That comes out in honor of October 7th.
Oh, okay.
Of this year. But all our books, Tiny Imperfections, Never Meant to Meet You, The Better Half, all on Amazon, Barnes & Noble online. And, of course, we love it if you get books at independent stores. And then right now, On Being Jewish is available for pre-order on Amazon.
Thank you so much. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be the amazing actress and singer, six-time nominee for Emmys and Tonys, Tova Feldshuh. And please join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, and Kiddush, live in person and on our Facebook page. Play us out this morning. Here's Medad Tassa singing Al Naharot Bavel by the waters of Babylon for Tisha B'Av coming up tomorrow night at Beit Simcha at 7:30 p.m., the 9th of Av. And don't miss my new class on the history of Zionism this Wednesday night at 7:30 at the JCC for 3 Wednesdays. Also available on Zoom. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week. A healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace.
איך משיר את... sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.